Hi, I'm Wendell. I'm learning what it means to be lived by God, loved by God. That's what life is. I'm learning what it means to be loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, an addiction to food, work, and control, and issues with pornography and alcohol and rage and panic and depression. My bag full of craziness is bigger than yours. This new study that we're having, by the way, one of the chapters in the new book that we're going to do is Recovery is Not a Pain Contest. You know, sometimes in the recovery community, it's like the first liar doesn't stand a chance. They say, well, I have this issue. And the next person gets, well, that ain't nothing. I got this. Well, that ain't nothing. I got this. And so it becomes this, you know, pain contest, which is not at all what recovery is. But anyway, I realize I've got a whole sack full of rocks I drag around that it's hopefully getting lighter. We're talking about like four different emotions that can go awry. Last week we talked about depression, which is grief and disappointment kind of gone off the track. And tonight we're going to talk about anger. And anger itself is not off the track. But anger that turns to rage, or anger that turns to long-standing grudges, seeking revenge, violence, that kind of thing. That kind of anger has gone off the track. Next week, we're going to talk about fear. Megan is not here tonight, but she's going to bring that lesson, talk about fear when it goes off the track. And then the Sunday after that, which I think is the 12th, Wayne is going to talk about shame, which is guilt and regret gone off the track. So we're talking about emotions that are normal. There's no such thing as a bad emotion. We've talked about that over and over. You feel what you feel. Your emotions are just gauges that you read of how you're doing. And when it gets over on the red line, that's when you know we might ought to, you know, stop and kind of pay attention and monitor what's going on inside. So we want to talk about anger tonight. And I'm going to tell you straight up, I've had a really tough time with this lesson because I've had just kind of a hard time pinning down what is anger. And I've really come to the conclusion that in our lizard primal brain, and we talked about that, what, 6-8 months ago, the caveman brain, the survivalist brain that's lurking way back in the shadows, way behind this intelligent, reasonable human brain, that primal brain that kind of just kicks in with instinct, there are two emotions that kind of kick in and become almost uncontrollable. In fact, they begin to control us. And anger is one. And the other one is lust. You know, once you begin to feel lust, if you have something to do with that lust, I mean, there's somebody in front of you or something in front of you or an opportunity, that lust just takes over and it controls you and you're consumed by it and you just, you know, jump over the cliff. Boom, now we're, you know, full on in it. And it's the same thing with anger. Once anger begins to take hold, it takes control of you and you no longer control it. It controls you. And I got to thinking about those two things, and when you're a caveman, literally, when you are every day thinking this may be my last day on earth, you know, because there's a saber tooth that lives over there, and there's some big ones that live over there, and then there's a caveman that lives right over the hill with a bigger club than mine, and he likes my wife, and, you know, he may want to come and get her and you know, take her away from me. And so, you know, how do I survive? And you think about anger is this, you don't hurt me, you don't steal my wife. And lust is, if we don't have lust, we don't have babies, our race doesn't survive. So anger and lust were absolutely essential just to survive. I use anger to motivate myself to protect myself or defend myself, and I use lust to procreate my species. And without both of these, we no longer exist. I mean, think about that. Without anger and lust, the caveman ceases to exist. He has to have those two raw emotions. Some of y'all are looking at me like, where in the world is he going with this? I don't know. There were just some thoughts I had. But it is true. Think about that. We live in modern society. Take yourself out of here. Put yourself back in raw, primal existence in a cave. Without anger and lust, you cease to exist. You have to have some sort of something, in some sort of gumption inside of you that overcomes the fear and says, no, you will not take my wife and my children, or that piece of meat I've got hiding in the back of the cave. You can't have that. That's for me and my family tomorrow. Anger. And then you have lust that says, if we don't do the big nasty, we don't have, I don't like to call it that, but you're in church, so what else do you call it? If we don't do this, then we cease to exist. We won't be here anymore. So you have to have both. So when we talk about anger, we're talking about something that's just potentially volatile. It's like you've got a can of open gasoline and you've got a whole bunch of Bic lighters around it that you're playing with, and you're just thinking, you know, this could get out of hand really, really fast. So anger is something that, I don't know, it's just something that's kind of hard to talk about. I got to thinking about some practical ways to look at it. What if before we left tonight, what if everybody here was issued a spy cam that, you know, you could clip on your ear or your glasses or your collar, and it was going to follow you around all week. It was going to photo or video all your moves and all your reactions to life. You know, it would catch every one of us in some sort of an angry or a semi-angry moment throughout the week. And if we came back in and Alex, through his wizardry, could play all of them through the computer up here on the big screen, we would just cackle to see the variety of ways that we come up with to get angry and to express our anger. We might actually get some creative ideas from each other. I didn't know you could throw that through that. I didn't know that. But, you know, some of us have like a hair trigger anger. Boom! That's all it takes. A look. Just anything will trigger the anger. Some of us are very slow burning. Just slow, slow, slow. We look at everybody else getting upset and we're saying, that doesn't bother me, that doesn't bother me. But you let it pile up and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, we explode. Some of us are very verbal with our anger. I've got the little spy cameras going and, man, all week long we're just, you know, getting all upset about everything and we're being so verbal. I don't see why you have to do this. And I don't see why, you know. Some of us are very physical when we get angry. You know, puffing and blowing and hitting things and throwing things and slamming doors. And, you know, we get real physical when we get angry. Spy cams would pick that up. Some of our anger is very obvious. You know, it's just easy to see. Oh, that person's angry. That person's angry. But some of us have learned, have you heard of passive aggression? Yeah. You know, you learn how to be angry in a way that gets your point across, but nobody could really accuse you of being angry. I'm not angry. Why do I feel like you are? I'm not angry. Everybody knows you're angry. No, I'm not angry. It's just this passive aggression that just kind of turns that little screw in, and then it turns it a little harder and harder. But I didn't say a word. I didn't say a word. You know? It's the way you looked at me. What do you mean the way I looked at you? You know? Just this passive aggression that just, you know, We just subtly get up and leave the room. You know, you're mad at me. No, I'm not. I just got them left the room. Right. You know. So there's this obvious anger, and then there's this passive aggression. Some of us have learned that when we want to be left alone, we just get grumpy. You know, I'm just going to be in a general bad mood. And it keeps everybody at arm's length. Nobody will bother me if I'm in a grumpy mood. I'm not mad. I'm not mad, I just don't talk, you know? All you got to do is thump somebody like that a time or two and you'll see real quick that they're mad. Just try that. When they're grumpy, just go up and boom, boom. Or go up and mess their hair up, you know? You'll tell real quick, you're more than just grumpy, you know? But some people display it that way. They just kind of get grumpy, and a lot of times that's just to keep people at a safe distance. Just stay away from me. Some of us are angry because that's the technique we learned in our childhood, how to solve problems. The one who yells the loudest is right. Or the one who yells the loudest gets what they want. Or the one who pushes the hardest becomes boss, becomes the alpha. And so we learned that aggression and anger, it's a technique we learned to get what we want. I want life to go my way, so I will become the aggressor. And on top of that aggression, I had just a pinch or two of anger, just a pinch or two of that scowly, aggressive anger. And I don't know, this gets into something else, but I just thought I'd mention it. To me, it seems like an angry person tends to react to life instead of respond to it. That's something that we've talked a lot about in Pathway, is the difference between reacting to life and responding to life. Reacting to life is kind of goes back to that primal thing. There's a tiger at the doorway, I'm going to get mad, you know. I feel threatened, I feel whatever, so I'm going to get mad. And it's just, I just react. I don't really think. To respond to life is to think, now wait a minute, there's a backstory to what just happened. I probably ought to think about that backstory. I'm talking to another human being right now. Do I really want to ream them out? Do I really, you know? And so we slow down and we think and we respond instead of react. So, you know, it'd be, don't y'all think it would be just hilarious if we wore a little spy cam and everybody brought it back in? And not for a whole week, that would take too long, but just maybe for just Tuesday afternoon. Just, you know, one afternoon for 2 hours, and we just get little, you know, Alex could just take little snippets out of the, you know, it would be hilarious to see all the different, do what?
Get the popcorn going.
Yeah, we'd get some popcorn and Cokes, it'd be a fun thing to watch. And whenever each one of our videos came up, we would just like shrink, you know, the rest of them was like, ah, and then when our turn came up, we'd shrink down. But anyway, it'd be kind of fun, anyway. But I think there's just lots of different ways that we express anger, or that anger finds a way of expressing itself. Maybe we could say it that way. But, you know, we have two more lessons coming up. We have a lesson on fear, and we have a lesson on shame. And it dawned on me that anger has a lot to do with fear, and anger has a lot to do with shame. If you stop and think about that. Anger is fear turned outward. I'm afraid. I feel threatened. I feel unsafe. How can I turn the tables? You are threatening me in some way. The look you're giving me, your tone of voice, what you just said is threatening me. What you just did is threatening me. Your body language is threatening me. I'm afraid of you. And so I don't like that fear. What am I going to do? I'll bow up. I'll show you that I have anger. You know, little chihuahua, pour water on one of them and see how small they get. But buddy, if they're dry, they'll puff that hair up and they look like, you know, they look like one of those little potbelly pigs. They try to look intimidated when they feel threatened. So fear will turn itself outward with anger. So I'm telling on all of us angry people here tonight, people who are perpetually angry are very fear-filled. We tend to look at people who are angry as being strong or dangerous people. They're not. They're fear-filled people. They're afraid of being found out. They're afraid of failure. They're afraid of whatever, afraid of being seen as weak. And so they have to counteract that fear by bravado, by aggression, you know, flexing, yelling, posturing, accusing, threatening. You have to. And shame is actually fear turned inward, where you turn the fear of who you really are inward, and you start to feel ashamed. Not you're not guilty for what you did, but you feel ashamed of who you are. So you turn this fear, or you turn this anger inward on yourself. So anger and fear are related, and anger and shame are related. So this emotion of anger is really twisted up. I don't know, it's really twisted up with a lot of other emotions. I have a lot of questions tonight, can you tell? There's just a lot of, I'm raising a lot of stuff and I'm not giving any answers because I don't have any. But it's just something, I don't let's at least get anger out on the table and look at it, and maybe we'll figure something out collectively. I don't know. Well, here's the third thing I want to say tonight is, have you figured out what makes you mad? Do you know what it is that makes you mad? Because I think that's where it gets down. We can laugh about this little spy cam that would follow us around for a week, and we can scratch our heads and say, oh yeah, fear and anger, they're related. Oh yeah, anger and shame, they're related. That's kind of a philosophical thing. But what about what makes you mad? What about what makes me mad? I think that's where we need to talk. Is it when you feel threatened? You know, is that when you get angry, is when you feel like somebody is threatening you? They're questioning your integrity. They're questioning your reputation. They're questioning your authority. They're questioning your wisdom. They're questioning your behavior. Or they're literally threatening you. I will hurt you. I will expose you. I will, you know, whatever. Is that what triggers your anger? You don't have to tell me. I'm just helping us to think. Is that what triggers our anger? Is it when you don't get what you want? Stop and think about that. You have this thing set in your mind of what you want. You expect something, a meal. You expect an encounter with somebody. You expect a job interview. You expect a trip to the mall, whatever it is. You expect certain things to turn out a certain way. I know what I want out of this relationship. I know what I want out of this conversation. I know what I want out of this encounter. It didn't turn out that way. And so, you know, we're maybe initially confused. I'm not sure why that didn't turn out that way. And then maybe it turns to disappointed. Like, wow, I kind of wished it. And then it just turns into anger. I didn't get what I wanted. You know, I want my money back. You know, I didn't sign up for this disappointment. That's why marriages are so full of anger. Because we get into them, we're expecting this, and then we get this. This is not what I signed up for. This is not what I expected out of this. You know, we get that, we have those where we work. We sign up, and people who work there say, well, when you work here, it's like this. And we sign up and, you know, start working there, and then within a couple months, it's like, this is not at all what I was told. This is not what I was expecting. So not getting what you want, kind of related to that, when things just don't go according to plan. My worst anger was when our kids were little. Y'all connect the dots on that one. They connect really, really fast, don't they? When does life ever go as you plan when there are little kids involved? When? Ever? Wouldn't you be shocked? Wouldn't you be absolutely shocked if you made a set of plans that involved little kids and you carried out those plans and they unfolded flawlessly? Wouldn't you be like, how did that happen? How, you know, who brought the pixie dust to make this magic happen? Because it just doesn't, you know. So if you're a parent of small kids or if you're a grandparent of small kids, well, by the time you're grandparents, I think you're like, no, life doesn't go the way you plan it. Even as grandparents, you know, life doesn't go as planned. So maybe that's the source of anger, when things don't go according to the plan. This is one that I'm hearing more and more as we share in our small groups, our Pathway small groups. But this is something that is coming out full force in the gathering that we have every Sunday morning here. At 11 o'clock, we have the gathering. It's a pretty cool place to come. I'm looking around seeing several who come routinely. But it's just a place to share your questions, to talk openly. And, I mean, it's just in a circle, and we just throw out ideas. We talk about political things. We talk about emotional things, relational things, theological things, life things, whatever. But something I'm seeing more and more is that there's a real anger, especially right now, in terms of just injustice, that we're angry at injustice. We're angry at bullying. We're angry at, you know, seeing people who can't defend themselves being hurt or manipulated, or, you know, we're angry at social inequity, and we're angry at deception, and we're angry at a lot of these things that are just they may directly and they may not directly affect us, but we're looking at it and we're saying, that's not right. And so we get angry at that. I don't know about you, but I kind of put that, everything we've talked about is over here. I kind of put that over here, you know, because it kind of goes with what Jesus did when he went in the temple and he said, this is not right. This is not right. You know, and he got angry and he actually got physically violent, you know, turned over some tables. And I mean, he got pretty aggressive about that. So, but sometimes, okay, now we're going to go back over to this pile. Sometimes we can take this sense of justice and we can let it become overdeveloped. And we get this overdeveloped sense of justice to where life becomes one giant exercise in keeping score. But he got a slightly bigger piece of pie than I got. When you clapped for them after they sang their song, you clapped for like 30 seconds. When you clapped after that person sang a song, it was like only 10 seconds. Let's, you know, come on. Let's. So we develop, and then we start taking everything personally. We keep track of ourselves. But I gave you this much last time I did you a favor, and when you did me a favor, you only gave me this much. So then that sense of justice begins to override grace and just generosity, and we get this overdeveloped sense of justice. By the way, if you want to know what we're going to talk about next week in Path or in the gathering, that may be where we go. We talked about it today, about possibly talking about grace and justice. How do these work? So anyway, it could be this overdeveloped sense of justice. Does that? A lot of people were shaking their head because I find this in myself that we feel so righteous when we have this sense of justice for these people over here are getting picked on, but that same attitude can leak right into everything I do and everything that's done to me, and I start to become this scorekeeper. Does that ring a bell with anybody? I lived a lot of my life as a scorekeeper. I kept score. I did them five favors, pretty significant favors. And that they not only didn't repay my favors, but I hardly remember a single thank you. Wow. You know? So that's pretty good reason to be angry, isn't it? Well, little kids in a sandbox, maybe, but adults, you know? But that's how I lived a lot of my adult life, just this overdeveloped sense of justice. And then I think another huge, huge source of anger that I think we need to explore is just plain old self-hatred. If you hate yourself, you're going to hate on other people. If you're angry at yourself, you're going to be angry with everybody that you come in contact with. And in recovery, I would say what I've seen from my standpoint is that a huge bulk of people who deal with anger issues deal with self-hate issues. I hate myself, and misery loves company, so I'm going to make sure you know I don't feel so keenly toward you. Someone would be angry toward you. Misery loves company. If I'm not happy today, nobody else can be happy either. And if I'm not happy about myself, I don't want you to be happy about yourself either. So I'm going to cause a big stink here and make everybody uncomfortable. That's why, to me, the first step in my recovery happened when I stopped hating myself. No, that wasn't the first step. The first step was when I realized God loved me. And when I realized God loved me, then that gave me license to love myself, and that replaced the self-hate. I didn't sit down and decide to stop hating myself. I decided to let God love me, and then the rest fell in line. So, I don't know. Do you kind of know where your anger comes from? I mean, I think it's important that we know the source of our anger. And I think it's not bad to also know, how does my anger manifest itself? Am I a slow burn? Am I explosive? Am I passive aggressive? Am I verbal? Am I physical? I think it's good to know these things. Well, the last thing, and we're running out of time. The last thing is, I think that to deny anger is just downright silly. I'm not angry. No, I'm not angry. If somebody tells you you're angry, you probably need to explore that because they see something, you know. So stop denying your anger and stop muzzling it. And stop saying, well, I probably shouldn't be angry. What good does that do you? To tell yourself, well, I know I shouldn't be angry. Well, you are angry. There is no should or shouldn't to it. You are angry. If you're angry, just say, I'm angry. That's the first step. Stop denying it. Stop trying to stuff it. Stop trying to hold it in and simply say, I am angry. Just admit your anger. And then find some people you feel comfortable with that you trust and ask them to help you talk it out. And there have been times when I've actually said, if you need to bring, you know, a wiffle ball bat and a bunch of pillows and you just want to flail on them while you're telling me while you're angry, do it, you know. And I mean, if you feel comfortable with, I shouldn't say this, but if you feel comfortable with a person, if you say, hey, if you want to bring a shotgun out in the country somewhere, I'll throw up milk jugs and you can shoot them. Just don't shoot me. And you can take your anger out on the milk jugs, whatever. If you know whatever you need to do, if you need to get a piece of sheetrock and put your fist through it to get some of the most extreme part of your anger out, and then let's sit and talk about where did that come from? Where did it, you know, you just need to talk it out with somebody you trust. Here's another thing that I think we should talk about. We've got to talk about this. So you can throw something at me if you want, and I really don't care. I'll throw it back harder. I'll be pissed. Watch it. I have to disagree with old buddy Paul. Paul said, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Sometimes you need to let the sun go down on your anger. Sometimes you need to let all parties involved just walk away and rest for a little while. You know, I got myself in so many problems because I thought, well, Paul said you're supposed to not let the sun go down on your anger. We need to talk this out. No, you don't need to talk it out quite yet. Sometimes you just need to let it rest, and you need to read the other person and figure out when the time is to come back to the subject and say, now can we talk about it? If they say no, walk away again. But wait until everybody is ready to talk about anger. To force the anger conversation without all parties being willing is just to create more anger. So just wait carefully and wisely until everybody's ready to talk about it. And then you can sit down and start to unpack it. Let the fires die down. Let the fires go out and then objectively talk about anger. And I guess the last thing we could say tonight that I would say to myself, when I'm facing anger issues, the thing I ask myself is, are my expectations out of life reasonable? You know, we say in the Serenity Prayer, so that I can be reasonably happy in this life. And a lot of my anger, I'm realizing now, came because I had unrealistic expectations about life. And when my expectations about life became more reasonable, I had far less issue with anger. Because I realized this universe was not designed to be my vending machine to give me everything I want. It's not the design. I'm part of something bigger, and it's not all about me. And it's not all about me getting what I want. This is about us working as a team, as a family, which means there has to be compromise. There has to be lowered expectations, or at least negotiated expectations, to where we can get along. So anyway, I feel like we've left a lot of sentences half said tonight. That the next half of the sentence, maybe this would be a good night to hang around and, you know, finish some of these sentences. I don't know that there would ever be a book or a lesson or a series of lessons that would ever give the end word on anger. You know, I don't think that we're ever going to get total understanding. That doesn't mean we shouldn't talk about it. I think we need to talk about it and try to understand it. All right, let's sing, band. It's all yours, Casey.